humankind is born to strife on earth, as the eternal struggle for existence manifests within the two-dimensional sphere on the surface of the planet. Territorial gains for food and living space become of primary importance, and humankind becomes violent and aggressive in an attempt to protect their domain or to seek further territory for the expanding population. Restrictive areas of living cause humans to become more aggressive and violent, and the fear of losing their domains motivates their actions. When humans are able to escape from the two dimensions of length and breadth and follow the spiritual awakening into the freedom of height in the third dimension, where there is no restriction of territory or time, they can then become gentle and humane, and seek the wider field of space. As the mind absorbs the fourth dimension of the space-time continuum, one becomes an evolved human being, with understanding and love of all things. Finding the meaning of life and why one exists as an individual brings one in tune with the universe. Then we can communicate through telepathy in the time variation of interstellar space. We can all achieve the calm serenity of the eternal presence within that divine spark of intelligence that pervades the entire universe. Harmony with all is found in love, with civilizations from other realms beyond the visible light barrier to which our eyes are attuned. We are born of this universe that consists of energy and matter vibrating in varying frequencies. As we expand our consciousness, we become aware of different frequencies of attainment, where the eternal truths of life await our perception and realization of the atomic harmonic numbers of the cosmos. Treading through the deep waters of personal experience where dangers lurked in the darkness of ignorance, I witnessed other realms beyond our world. I found the truth of supreme happiness and eternal life with a man from another world. He remains the only reality to me within this world where the inhabitants still believe in the illusion of their singular existence within the inhabited universe. Having been through the fires of experience and attainment, suffering the hardships of material want in a grabbing world like Earth brought me fortitude and endurance, courage and loyalty to an ideal of life beyond the confines of this solar system. Akin's thoughts direct me through the dangerous highways of life among people of Earth, where my work now aspires to the ideal of a better world for all people. No distance is too great for the alpha rhythm to travel between the brains of soulmates and offspring whose lives sometimes part in the quest of ultimate unity and harmony within our living universe. These telepathic waves flash through the far distances, where gravity rules the lives of planets, to another home of life to my beloved Akin and our son, Ailing, who was conceived on this home of life but was not born on this planet. Not for him the hazards of rocket-propelled spaceships encasing their pilots like coffins. Not for him to travel the stars wrapped in the swaddling cloth of a spacesuit and be packed like a sardine in a tin can in an endeavor to conquer space and the unknown environment beyond. What would happen to David and me now that my heart was affected by the change in time frequencies? Where would the money to live on come from? I was divorced from David's father, and my daughter from a previous marriage was living in London as she completed her medical studies. The farm was sold and strangers took over, and David and I were completely alone. Money to live is vital on this planet, so we decided to return to Johannesburg. We drove down the track in the MG, David and I, Susan and Vicky, while covetous eyes still watched from the road in the valley where a large American car remained parked by the boundary gate. A lone Harvard droned in the sky in the wake of a storm. The clean atmosphere of the mountains was beginning to develop bands of smoke haze. Back in Johannesburg, we found a home and I got a job with a leading bookseller, while David went to day school and excelled in all he did. But there was no fresh air in the basement of this great bookshop, and my heart condition became worse. I struggled on, however, and the bank would help me as long as I had a steady income. There was nothing left for us now in Natal, the land of my birth, where relatives of mine were settled in safe security on vast acres of rolling grasslands. I felt homesick, and a deep sadness entered my heart as the thought shivered through my mind. Only the African side of my adopted family offered us a home in the dry, open spaces of the Transvaal. I loved them for that, and would never forget their thoughtful gesture. The fresh breeze of the hive had swept my scarf into my eyes as I crossed Commissioner Street from the bookshop. Suddenly I felt stifled by it all, the crowds of white and black people thronging the street and all the close-packed, noisy, smelly traffic. I felt suffocated by it all and sensed the urgency to get out of this warren of a city with all its devastating noise and bustle. I had to escape back to the Drakensberg. When David's school broke for the holidays, I asked for leave and it was granted, as I had worked long and hard. The light of dawn flushed the eastern sky as David and I, along with Susan and Vicky, headed south in the MG, away from the enfolding wings cast about me by the covetous thoughts of men. The hue and cry would follow me to the farms as the security net cast its subtle and domineering tentacles to subjugate my freedom. They didn't know about Cathkin yet, however, where we could be lost forever in the mountains and only the sea wind would rustle through the long grass, bringing the breath of eternity in its damp fragrance. So, away to the open spaces and the far reaches of the sky, away to the freedom of the mountains where I could hear my beloved's voice calling in the lofty distances. His voice was singing in my heart as we moved with the wind from the wide open spaces of the Transvaal to the land of shadows in Natal, a distance of well over 300 miles. The MG responded to my touch on the open road, her perfection of performance maintained for all time after Akin's work on her engine. The great mountains of the Dragon shielded our passage as we branched off along a shortcut through Zulu lands. Cathkin beckoned us on with a clarity of atmosphere and grandeur of scenery. A sudden wave of longing saddened my eyes as I thought of my beloved. I recalled the fragrance of the glorious countryside from whence he comes, where the sea breeze plays with the fronds of maidenhair ferns that grow in profusion on the sunlit mountainsides, their delicate tracery of shiny black stems bending and waving to the sea's breath. I thought of my own lovely fern, given to me by Akin on Meeton, and how it was now growing well in my home, acclimated to the dry air of the hiveland and nourished by love and care. As I thought of these things, the fragrance of meat and seas filled my senses, and I knew Akin was near. I stopped the MG on the side of the road and we got out to watch the sky. To the south, enormous thunderheads reared up into the depths of blue, glistening white like great cauliflower heads, clear-cut and brilliant. Suddenly there was a flash in the sky. I took my box camera and pressed it against my chest to steady it as I pointed the lens to the top of the thunderclouds. As I did so, Akin's flat, domed spaceship suddenly appeared in the blue sky. It hovered against the great cloud bank, slowly losing height. In that instant, another spaceship appeared against the sky, moving with tremendous velocity, and I pressed the shutter to release. As the ship flashed down into the heavy cumulus of the cloud bank, I ran across the road and up the slope. When I reached the hilltop, the spaceships were gone, and the cumulonimbus spread out across the sky from the south. Akin's spaceship appeared again, and I took a series of photographs as it hovered and banked around in the sky. My reflex with the simple Brownie box camera was as instantaneous as the spaceship's appearances it had to be, or I could not have taken a single picture. A streak of lightning, a blue-white ribbon, darted from hilltop to cloud, and the crash of thunder died to silence before the hills could echo in answer. Triggered into life by the electricity generated within its heart, the fully aroused cumulonimbus composed of cells that grow, fuse and multiply moved with its animal-like nature over the hills. I realized that the cloud was repaying my thought with a tingling sensation over my scalp. Positive charges swarmed upward from the ground, using my body as a conductor, to meet the negatively charged leader coming from the cloud, as the earth charge leapt up through the ionized tunnel prepared in the atmosphere by the cloud leaders. Instantly I jumped from the rock on which I was standing, flattening myself in the grass, and rolled down the slope in the nick of time, as the return stroke from the earth shot up through the ionized tunnel to the cloud base, shattering the hardened rock. With the sound of a cracking whip, the air in the channel expanded in a sudden and terrible explosion, and shockwaves sent me rolling further down the steep slope, knocking the breath out of my body. As was my habit, I had put the camera back in its case and strapped it across my shoulder instead of placing it on the rock beside me. The leather strap had broken during my tumble down the hill, but it was otherwise unharmed. As I retrieved the camera, another return stroke flashed with an awful crack from the shattered rock. There was a crashing explosion as the tremendous heat in the lightning's channel expanded in waves of terrific sound. I had had enough. I ran to a large outcrop of rock ledges and sheltered beneath the largest of them, just as a curtain of rain and hail roared across the veldt. I trembled with nervous reaction, and my heart went into a wild tachycardia. It was completely out of rhythm, and I felt death touch my heart as the crack and crashing explosion of lightning return strokes continued. I was not alone in my haven. Birds of all kinds had sheltered there, and they fluttered and twittered in apprehension and uneasy disquiet. A reed buck came bounding out of the murk of driving hail to nestle beside me, its ears twitching as each lightning crack sounded dangerously close. The calmness and warmth of the reed buck quieted my heart, and I lay back with my arm over its back as the buck watched me with large, soft brown eyes. After some time, the explosive turbulence died away. We all came out of the shelter, the birds ruffling their feathers and strutting unafraid about my feet. The reed buck remained still, though, so I sat down again, resting my back against the wall of rock. I needed to rest, and I knew David and the dogs would be safe in the MG. As I sat, I thought about something strange that had happened some weeks before. A major in the British Army had called on me in my cottage in Parktown, and while we were having tea, there was an interruption at the door. I answered it to find a stranger standing there. "Good day, lady," the stranger said. "A grey Ford Zephyr that was parked outside your gate has run away into Empire Road. I watched it pull up on the opposite pavement about a mile down. It went along the road and through the traffic as if it were guided. It was very uncanny. Motorists coming in the opposite direction nearly crashed into each other in frightened surprise when they saw that car going along the road without a driver, just going straight past them, then turning up the pavement and remaining stationary between the trees. It even missed the trees." He ended, with a cry of amazement. "Perhaps someone was guiding the car," I replied quietly. "Oh no, lady, that's too much." The stranger hurried away to the gate. As he put his hat on and glanced back at me, I saw fear in his eyes. "Good gracious," said the major. "I must have forgotten to put my handbrake on." And he dashed out to rescue his car. I later learned that the major was a high-ranking officer in British intelligence who had been on General Montgomery's staff. He was a very sensitive and highly intelligent man, and a famous artist as well, who had come to South Africa to give a lecture to the Air Force. I felt sure now, though, under the circumstances, that the chief had sent him to look after me. With that thought, I felt a glow of warmth that restored my confidence. The reed buck suddenly jumped up and bounded away down the grassy slope. There was a rush through the grass and the dogs found me, happiness shining in their eyes. David treaded quietly through the veldt behind them in his rubber-soled shoes. The sun sets early beyond Cathkin, the peak casting long shadows over the hills. A cold, russet light touched the tops of the grass-mantled slopes, and the ever-changing mountain darkened the tumbling foothills. We sped on in the MG to the haven of the hostel to await Akin's coming. I hoped he would come soon. Although his spaceship was in the skies of Earth, perhaps he would not land. I only had 3 weeks leave from work before I would have to return to Johannesburg. The time factor on this planet crushed me again with its impact. This was our livelihood here, and I had David, the dogs and the MG to think about, as well as my home and the few precious possessions that gave us some comfort and beauty to live with. But Akin did land. Suddenly one afternoon, his great spaceship was there. There was nothing in the clear sky, and then it appeared in all its beauty, hovering close to the ground and gently landing. Completely unnoticed, the ship suddenly appeared in Earth's time field. Only I saw it. I ran to meet Akin. The halcyon days with Akin sped by. At night he would put me to sleep with his healing hands, and my heart returned to its normal rhythm again. We remained in the sanctuary of the mountains, and there was complete peace and happiness. My life had become whole once more in its unity with Akan, as it had when we had created another life to complete this wholeness. One morning, as I awakened in the glow of sunlight, Akan was gone from my side. I looked up into the higher atmosphere and saw his spaceship moving upward, surrounded by a vast condensation cloud. Still in Earth's time frequency, the spaceship glowed with a deep golden amber inside its departure field. And then it was gone, leaving behind a vast rotating cloud, its top smoothed off into a cap cloud by the frigid heights and its base like a wake of lines of magnetic force within the atmosphere. The great circular cloud remained in the higher reaches of the sky for the rest of the day, changing and forming into high cirro cumulus with a base of alto cumulus. The wind patterns moved it gradually across the sky as cirro stratus, and it caught the golden red rays of the sun, creating a covenant of color made of ice crystals in the high, milky cobweb veil. Akan was gone, back into the fathomless reaches of space beyond our solar system, away into those fathomless distances of velvet space. He was heading for the great blue-white star known on Earth as Vega in order to make a scientific surveillance of that distant star. Our solar system was moving toward Vega's hard brightness too, but the primordial plasma of the universe guided Akan's spaceship through the many frequencies of time. Galaxies rotating eternally in the uncharted void of intergalactic space give out a life impulse that is picked up by the sensitive instruments in Akan's spaceship. These instruments monitor the life cycles of galaxies, stars and planets and detect the amount of plasma within a solar system. The plasma output of a star is important for a system of planets, particularly for a star like the Sun with its sunspot cycles, which are affected by the movements of its planets. Jupiter, as a small star, triggers sunspots by increased magnetism when it is in a favorable position. This in turn affects Earth's atmosphere, causing weather changes as low pressure troughs cross geometric regions of the planet's surface. Vast climatic upheavals can occur. The planet can also trigger earthquakes on Earth by disturbing the equilibrium of the Sun, because our planet is completely affected by what happens to the Sun day we here are dependent on the star of our system. The Sun controls our atmosphere, our weather and our climate, and when Jupiter, the second waxing star of this system, aligns with Mars and the other planets of this solar system, the equilibrium of the Sun will be disturbed and earthquakes will rock our planet. What supermundane fate are we heading into, since our planet is so vulnerable, so dependent on the star of our system? And yet humans can only understand the immediate environment of their rapidly decaying world. I experienced the thoughtless selfishness of humanity when we returned to Johannesburg, and we had to struggle alone and abandoned. Oh, how alone one can be in this crowded world when one suddenly realizes there is nobody in all the world to turn to in one's hour of need. One is really alone, and the devastating realization explodes in the mind like a nightmare. Family, friends and strangers are all cast in one mold, indifferent, detached, unaware of one's struggle for existence in a hostile world. The horror of struggling for David and myself in the noisy racket and smog of a hostile city proved too much for me, and I became ill. The cold hand of fear would grip my heart as I lay awake in the night and wondered what would become of us and where our next meal would come from. There was only enough money in the bank to pay the rent and keep a roof over our heads for another month, and I experienced what millions of others on this planet suffer in their struggle for existence in a cruel economic system. I maintained an outward calm, however, and David knew nothing of our close encounter with dire poverty. He was wonderful and kept my strength going through his care and consideration, despite being all day at school and up half the night with homework. He is indeed an advanced human being. Knowing the meaning of starvation, one becomes aware of the dire sufferings of animals across this planet too. There are many beings without enough to eat, while people eat their fill and gorge on the delights of food. What does one do when one has no money for sustenance in a world like this? What does one do when one has no home to shelter in and the people one knows and helped in the past pass by uncaring or unknowing? As long as they themselves are all right, they continue to step on others to gain their daily bread, denying the right of bread to others by their selfish, acquisitive habits, guarding their land and possessions like creatures of the lower planes. Unable to turn to fellow humans in my hour of need, I turned to the universe instead. I knew the universe never takes one thing away unless something else is given. The major had called a few days previously. I had fainted at work in the airless bookshop, with a storm raging outside, and I had been worried about David's getting home from school. The major sent me home in a taxi and told me not to go back to work. He brought us a large hamper of delicious food and a bottle of champagne. He must have been keeping a watch on me all the time, I thought. He must have known of our desperate plight as I struggled to work to keep a roof over our heads. But my strength was going. A hemorrhage set in, and he rushed me to the hospital where they tied me up with drips and injections in preparation for a major operation early the next morning. The major stayed with me, never leaving my side until they wheeled me into the operating theater. As death touched my heart again, I could clearly see into the time field of the future. I knew my reincarnation cycle on this planet was nearly at an end and my life would turn full cycle and take me back to Meton, where I could remain with Akon as I had in a previous life on Venus. The truth spread the warmth of its enfolding wings about me. No matter what happened on this planet, I would never be alone again. I belonged to Akon. I was born of his race. Death held no fear for me, but only a blessed release from the confines of Earth's time and the cycle of reincarnation here, where humankind is on a lower plane of existence. There is no death, but merely a transition to energy of the life field and back to matter again in the cycle of life. One evening, I opened my eyes to see the major bending over the stark white hospital bed. His face was gentle and concerned, and his eyes were full of love as he looked into my eyes. I held out my hand and thanked him for all he had done. He clasped my hand in both his warm, firm hands. "Go to sleep now," he said. "Don't worry anymore. I'm going to look after you both from now on. Everything will be taken care of." And he bent over still more and kissed me. David came to the other side of the bed and kissed me. His arm was in plaster, cradled in a sling. "Oh," I sighed, then fainted again. Then, as if from a great distance, I heard him say, "It's all right, Mom. Only a broken wrist when I fell over the hurdles at school. I'm staying with Peter and his family, and they are taking wonderful care of me." The acute, burning pain of the hysterectomy incision brought me around again, and I saw the sister coming with a hypodermic syringe held high. She pulled down the bedclothes and jabbed me in the buttocks with the blunt needle, which hurt. With a sigh, I closed my eyes and floated away into the dreamless sleep of the drug she had given me. Was I dreaming, or did the major and my son come here last evening? I asked the sister next morning. "Indeed they did, and what a charming, handsome gentleman the major is," she sighed. "He left these beautiful red roses for you, and said he would be taking you home soon, where he will nurse you back to health again. In fact, here he is now. I will leave you alone together." She arranged the roses in a vase beside the bed. Their fragrance filled the ward with hope again. Although it meant being netted completely into the military machine, at least I would be taken care of. I felt sure that Akon had seen to that. The sick politics of the world had disgusted me beyond measure and I wanted nothing more to do with them. Politics was being used by the barbarians of this world. People of Earth will one day search within the skies of truth. They will find the distant shores of a glorious land, bathed by the seas of eternity and blessed by the glory of light from three stars. There, the great white seabirds circle ever higher in the dark sapphire blue of the sky, ever upward until they appear as mere specks in the far reach of the day. The music of the spheres vibrates through the air in harmony with the birds' flight as their vast white wings stretch out to gain even greater height over the dark blue seas. Up, up into the ice blue of the higher sky, where the directional pull is found. The white seabirds move with the tides of music to other isles set in the deep sapphire seas. The dancing rhythm of all life is attuned to the song of the universe. The eternal dance of the microatoms streams out from stars, and life is generated on myriad Earths within a galaxy where the limitless tracts beyond are kept within bounds by the minimum temperature of the trackless void. The spark of life within a planet is the residue of a star. All planets are cooled down stars in their everlasting process of evolution from mass to density. The volcanic breath within them forms the light of the atmosphere, which creates life through its interaction with radiation from the stars. This radiation collides with the molecules of planetary atmospheres to create the immortal light of electricity, and the animated particles wriggle and writhe throughout the radiant atmosphere, each with its own bright electric charge. The divine essence of life continues always. The soul awakens to knowledge in the higher spheres where the soul or life field is attracted to a planet evolved in a similar magnetic field and where one can be born again into matter or denser vibrations from the energy of death. It is merely a transition, a metamorphosis in all living things. There is no death, but merely a transition to energy of the life field and back to matter again in the cycle of life. A planet's firmament holds humankind within the bond of life, and the glory of the universe is humanity's heritage. Humankind will soar into the splendor of star-filled space as the stars shed their radiance to help us find this glorious road to the stars. Humanity will come out of this world, will come out of the shadows of strife and will move with the winds of space to other planets in the light of the universe, where no minor discord can darken the glory of light. We can create harmony throughout the fathomless depths of interstellar space where our minds can reach out to contact other minds in telepathic communication. The spatial void acts as a transmitter when one tunes in on the same wavelength. Wisdom and love combine with immortality within this universal unity to produce a highly evolved human being who is a part of eternity, existing within that divine spark of intelligence that pervades the entire universe. The harmonious and orderly rhythm called God. I have known love in all its radiant splendor. My heart has awakened to its glow, forever nourished by the golden waves of light, so that I might reach out and encompass others to give them strength, courage and incentive to live on in a world fast becoming more and more dangerous to exist in. As hydrogen clouds spin and condense into stars and planets, dust clouds are pushed out from the nucleus of our Milky Way galaxy. They form the vast spiral storm in the silky darkness of outer space. They reflect the rose red of divine light in the creation of stars and planets to harbor life within its shell of speeding light, where we all have our being all made out of stardust. The Alpha and Omega of all things. Epilogue. It is more than 21 years since Akin landed on the top of Flying Saucer Hill in his beautiful spaceship of light. Our son, Ailing, is now 19 years old in Earth time. And yet they have come back. They have not forgotten me. I have lived on borrowed time for 20 years in order to complete this book and bring the knowledge of our environment in the universe to the people of this planet. We live in the vast and awesome universe. But its magnificence can be understood, loved and tamed by harmony. We can think and pick up clues to work out our destiny in this solar system as an energy crisis looms ever closer. Humans of Earth deplete the fossil fuels that have served them so faithfully. Earth has been giving of its bounty through the pastures of time nature provides, but humankind continues to divide. The truth in all its simplicity will be found in the pages of this book. These truths have always been. They are universal, and if humankind can learn to abide by them, perhaps this book can set the example. There is always a reason and an answer to all things in the universe. If only people would think, we could find its bounty. I have found its bounty in all its glorious and magnificent providence. It is simple and free, an intelligent energy that can be manipulated and controlled, loved and trusted. That bounty is light, the electromagnetic wavelength of our galaxy. It has given harmony to the most beloved places, such as the farm, White Elif, at Rosetta, where Flying Saucer Hill rears up like a guardian mountain with the dip in the top, where my late sister and her wonderful husband lived for so many years, and where Akin first found me waiting for him on the mountaintop.